produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Friday, May 2nd, and it's 420 summer in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, and this is your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Tomorrow is the Global Marijuana March, taking place in over 200 cities worldwide. Check out globalmarijuanamarch.org for more details on the march in your area. Take to the streets and demand respect. We are not criminals. We are cannabis consumers. We are no more criminals for smoking pot in private than citizens who take a drink in private. We can end adult marijuana prohibition, but the world needs to see us standing up for our rights. It starts with you. Take the time to get involved. Friday is Cannabis Community Day on the Stash, and coming up after the news, we're speaking with our regular guest, Steve Bloom, the webmaster at celebstoner.com. Steve's got the details for New York City's Marijuana March, along with a New York native's look at how the Big Apple became the marijuana arrest capital of the world. We also break down the role of weed in the NFL draft and great box office weekends for Harold and Kumar and celeb stoner Amy Poehler's new movie, Baby Mama. Next, Cannabis Carrie brings back Freedom People with a perfect song for a protest weekend, New Revolution. Let's all start a new revolution and get hemp re-legalized in this country. Then we wrap things up with Tim Smith, a criminal defense attorney in Cincinnati, Ohio. Tim's here to tell us about the Marijuana March event this weekend in Cincy and the threats by law enforcement to shut them down by threatening the venue owner's liquor license. Finally, don't forget that every Saturday we're now posting the Normal Weekend Music Stash, where you can get all of the last 10 songs from our daily musical breaks in one podcast, suitable for your weekend party pleasure. If you have a band that you would like to be featured on our podcast, please send us an email at stash@normal.org. So sit back and relax with your favorite strain and enjoy your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Medical marijuana user dies without transplant. Seattle, Washington. A musician who was denied a liver transplant because he had used marijuana with medical approval under Washington state law to ease the symptoms of advanced hepatitis C died on Thursday. The death of Timothy Guerin, 56, at Bailey Boucher House, an intensive care nursing center, was confirmed to the Associated Press by his lawyer, Douglas Hyatt, and Alicia Mark, a spokeswoman for Virginia Mason Medical Center, which operates Bailey Boucher. Dr. Brad Roeder, the physician who authorized Guerin to smoke pot to alleviate for nausea and abdominal pain and to stimulate his appetite, said he did not know it would be such a hurdle if Guerin were to need a transplant. The case has highlighted a new ethical consideration for those allocating organs for transplant, especially in the dozen states that have medical marijuana laws. When dying patients need a transplant, should it be held against them if they've used pot with a doctor's blessing? Guerin died a week after his doctor told him a University of Washington Medical Center committee had again denied him a spot on the liver transplant list because of his use of marijuana, although it was authorized under Washington state law. Guerin believes he contracted hepatitis C by sharing needles with speed freaks as a teenager. In recent years, he said, pot has been the only drug he's used. In December, he was arrested for growing marijuana. He had been in the hospice for 2 months and previously was rejected for a transplant at Swedish Medical Center for the same reason he later got from the University Hospital. Swedish said he would be considered if he avoided pot for 6 months, and the University Hospital offered to reconsider if he enrolled in a 60-day drug treatment program, but doctors said his liver disease was too advanced for him to last that long. The University Hospital Committee agreed to reconsider anyway, then denied him again. The idea of keeping drug addicts off of transplant lists is not necessarily a bad idea. There are precious few organs to go around, and one should not be given to a person who is just likely to destroy the new organ because of their addictions. But this is clearly not the case with medical marijuana patients. The grim irony here is that Guerin could have used other drugs to treat his hepatitis symptoms, but those pharmaceuticals are toxic to the very liver he needed to be transplanted. He used medical marijuana because of its lack of liver toxicity. Perhaps it was what kept him alive as long as he was. Perhaps the other drugs would have killed him more quickly. Doctors in charge of the transplant division at the University of Washington Medical Center were unsure that after the transplant, Guerin wouldn't resume using medical marijuana. Most of their quotes reveal an astonishing lack of understanding about cannabis, with worries about Guerin being unable to control a so-called addiction to cannabis, that, had he continued smoking cannabis, his immune system, suppressed for the transplant, would be unable to fight off any infections or molds he might pick up from smoking. A man is dead today because of ignorance about medical marijuana, stereotypes against responsible cannabis users, and the cruel federal prohibition of the most helpful plant known to mankind. Florida bill would bring stiffer penalties for marijuana grow houses. Running an indoor grow house to cultivate marijuana would bring stiffer penalties under a bill now heading to Florida Governor Charlie Crist's desk. The legislation would make it a third-degree felony, punishable by up to 5 years in prison, to own a house where marijuana is being cultivated, packaged, and distributed. The bill would also reduce the number of marijuana plants that would have to be in a home for a person to be convicted of a second-degree felony, which would be punishable by up to 15 years in prison. Right now, a person would have to have 300 plants in their home to be convicted of a second-degree felony, but the bill would reduce that number to 25. In addition, if a child was living in the home, a person could spend up to 30 years in prison. The Senate unanimously passed the bill yesterday. It passed the House last month. I think this is a bill they haven't really put much thought into. Suppose you're a Florida landlord and you rent your property out to someone who then grows a single marijuana plant for personal use. As the owner of the home, are you now headed to 5 years in prison? If your renter grows 25 plants, are you now sent up for 15 years? If your renter has kids, are you now going to prison for 30 years? Think about the consequences of this. The rental market is tight already, and landlords are always having trouble finding good tenants. What will landlords do to protect themselves from the potential grower/renter? Will landlords, in addition to criminal background checks they already perform, now be insisting on pre-rental and random drug testing of their renters? Will they be forced to perform those 24-hour notice rental inspections more often? And what of the people trying to rent? If you had made a mistake in your youth and got busted with marijuana, how likely are landlords going to want to rent to you? I believe this bill is going to create even more homeless people in Florida, as those people on the margins economically who have drug convictions in their past are rejected for rentals. Decriminalization bill in New Hampshire dies in Senate. Concord, New Hampshire. After being rejected by the Senate Judiciary Committee in a 4-0 vote last Thursday, House Bill 1623 was defeated this afternoon in a voice vote by the full Senate. The bill, which would have reduced the penalty for possessing less than a quarter ounce of marijuana, had been marked for death since it received a rare veto threat from Governor Lynch following passage by the House. Matt Simon, executive director of the New Hampshire Coalition for Common Sense Marijuana Policy, was not discouraged by the result. Quote, "A strong majority of voters now understand that our marijuana laws were written for the 1970s and that they need to be updated for the 21st century," he explained. "Through this process, I think we have demonstrated that a reform of this nature is both wise and inevitable," end quote. Simon cited the 193-141 House vote as a turning point for marijuana reform in New Hampshire. Quote, "It's tough to raise this kind of issue in an election year," he said, "but given the results from our recent poll, we're confident that decision makers will catch up with public opinion when the next opportunity arises," end quote. Yes, congratulations to the reformers who have moved decrim forward in the Granite State. Matt is right. Just getting a passage from the House is a major accomplishment. Don't be too discouraged about losing this battle, because we keep making progress on winning the war.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
All right, it's Friday Cannabis Community Day here on the eve of the Global Marijuana March taking place all over the world and, of course, in New York City. And when we talk New York City and Fridays, we always talk to Steve Bloom, the webmaster at celebstoner.com. Steve, welcome back to the Daily Audio Stash.
Hey there, Russ. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Really busy getting ready for the march here in Portland. What's happening up there in New York for you?
Well, you know, New York is the home of the, you know, the May event. It started here and then it's branched out to all over the country and the world. This year it's going to be starting at Tompkins Square Park in the East Village, and there's going to be a march going up First Avenue at about 1:30 up to the UN, and the rally will continue at the Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza for a rally for drug peace.
Well, New York City's pretty huge, so what kind of crowds do you get there for the Global Marijuana March?
The crowds have gotten kind of small over the years in New York. It kind of dovetails into the discussion around the alarming rate of marijuana arrests in New York that came out this week. The report that reported that were almost 400,000 arrests of the last decade in New York for marijuana.
Yeah, we reported on that this week. That was pretty alarming.
The police, you know, as they go after people in the streets for smoking pot, they have targeted the marijuana march each year for the last 7 or 8 years, pretty much, you know, starting with Giuliani when he was the mayor, and Giuliani kind of caught up to it in a sense that it was kind of overflowing in Washington Square Park. And one year, you know, it was kind of like a big pot party. And I think Giuliani's people, you know, found out about it and said, hey, we're not going to let that happen again. Next year, they arrested 250 people at Washington Square. And then the following year, they booted the event out of Washington Square, which is in the Village area of Manhattan, which is kind of prime location. And they moved it to Battery Park, which was sort of out of the way downtown, down around the where the Ground Zero area was, but farther south. And it's not a really hopping area on a Saturday. So they kind of isolated the event. But the following year, they arrested 300 people down there. I was among those. I wasn't arrested. I was among those who were pepper sprayed that year. So it was kind of like the worst of, like, the Giuliani years and how they had targeted the marijuana event. And due to the change of locations, due to the arrests, perhaps due to the chaotic organization of the event in general, the numbers of people attending diminished significantly. And they're in the process of kind of rebuilding, but it's a little hard to rebuild when every year it's in a different location and it keeps moving around. But nevertheless, I'll be there to participate as a speaker and also to report on the event for Celeb Stoner tomorrow.
Yeah, that report you're talking about, that a marijuana arrest crusade, boy, that was pretty shocking numbers. We've been reporting on that here at the Daily Audio Stash. It shows that the arrests went from 3,400 when Giuliani came into office to nearly 40,000 last year under Bloomberg. But marijuana is decriminalized in New York. Is that not true?
The way it was described, I went to the panel discussion with Harry Levine and Deborah Small, a couple of police officials that they held at the Bar Association the other night here in New York, to expand on the overall discussion of what is in the report. And one of the things that was kind of interesting, Harry Levine, who's a professor of sociology at Queens College here in New York and, you know, big supporter of normal, you know, he said that a lot of the arrests are due to not smoking necessarily in public, but possessing marijuana in public. And in other words, when the police stop you and they start, you know, their process of arresting or searching and so on and so forth, once they get you to take something out of your pocket and show it to them, it's therefore in public, and that's where you're breaking the law, as opposed to being in possession of. But the numbers are not shocking in that, you know, having lived in New York all these years, during this, we've seen the increase. We know what's happened. And it peaked in 2000 with 50,000 arrests. And, you know, going back to, like you said, when Giuliani came in, there was less than the number about 3,000. Even before Giuliani, it was less than 1,000. It was very hard to get arrested for marijuana in New York growing up here. I grew up here. You'd have to pretty much, you know, step on a cop's foot and blow smoke in his face to get, you know, hassle for pot. They never said, but, you know, once Giuliani came in and he had his whole sort of plan of, you know, a quality of life crimes, reducing crime in New York. And an interesting point that was also made was that although a lot of the blame and a lot of finger pointing is at Giuliani for starting this, you know, crusade, as they call the marijuana arrest crusade, in this last 6 years of Giuliani's time in office when he began his arrest, actually, there were less arrests during his last 6 years in office than there have been during the first 6 years of Bloomberg. And Bloomberg's really not noted for being an anti-drug guy, but more or less, you know, what's happened is that the police have never been kind of told to stop this behavior. So we'll see what happens tomorrow at the rally. You see if the police presence is as strong as it always has been.
Well, I think one of the most troubling things about that report had to do with the actual racial disparity in the arrests in New York.
85% of the people who are arrested for marijuana in New York are black and Hispanic, 15% are white. And I know a couple of those people, you know, honestly, white people who have been arrested, so they are going after white people as well. It's just a question of where you are. And the people I've known have gotten arrested. Rob Cantrell has been on your show and talked about it, the comedian.
Yeah, it's a sad story, and we'll be talking with Dr. Levine probably in next week's Daily Audio Stash. We'll get some more information on that. Let's talk about sports a little bit here. I'm a big NFL football fan, and I was, of course, watching the NFL football draft, and there was a number of highly touted draft picks that had some problems with marijuana, and this affected them in the draft, correct?
Yeah, they had problems with marijuana, and, you know, one case there was one athlete who actually had a bust that involved Vicodin. There are several of them who have, almost all of them had failed drug tests at some point in time during their college careers. And, you know, what traditionally happens with college athletes when they're up for the NFL draft, if they have any of these negatives, such as drug arrests or failed drug tests, they drop on the chart or the board, as they call it, and instead of being first or second rounders, they become third or fourth rounders. And then when they draft them later, they will, you know, receive less money. You know, you pretty much, you know, the higher draft picks get the most money, obviously, and the lower draft picks the least. So what happened was there were four players that we were following, four who had been noted for their failed drug tests, for their arrests, and only one of the four players actually made the first round. It's a Kansas player named Aqib Talib, who was the 20th pick by Tampa, and he had admitted to failing tests while in Kansas during the scouting combine that they had in February, but he basically, you know, said that he was being immature, and that was stuff he did when he first became a student, and, you know, now that he was a senior, you know, he cleaned up his act, and basically the coach of the Bucks, John Gruden, said that, well, you know, we're not living in the past, going to live in the future. We're going to trust that, you know, that we're going to give him the opportunity to prove himself. So it didn't hurt him, but there were two other players that it did hurt. Chicago, the Bears took Arkansas defensive tackle Marcus Harrison, who had a arrest last summer for marijuana and ecstasy. And clearly the Bears scouting director said he should have been a first round pick. He's already paid his penance. We feel we're getting him at a bargain rate. Another player who was picked by the Super Bowl Giants, Mario Manningham out of Michigan, a wide receiver, he also went down significantly in the draft. And basically, his problem was due to arrest that had to do with Vicodin plus failed drug tests. But one player who didn't get picked at all, and that was kind of interesting, a guy named Adarius Bowman out of Oklahoma State. And I had been reading that he was also up for a possible first or second round. Now, they have seven rounds in the draft, 252 players picked. He did not get selected at all. Now, he was arrested for marijuana earlier in the month, and so I think it was so recent, you know, it had this major impact on him, whereas some of the other guys, their arrest and failed drug tests went back farther. Mm. So, you know, this is the status of these four guys out of the 252.
It just always amazes me when I see the NFL cracking down so hard on players that are using such a natural, non-toxic pain reliever like marijuana, and yet, you know, they'll be on the sidelines and having the team doctors over there pumping them full of all sorts of narcotics to keep them on the field. It just seems wrong to me.
Right.
Now, one last thing we got here, of course, this last weekend was the big opening weekend for the Harold and Kumar movie, and apparently did really well.
Yes, it did. It's the number two movie in the country right now. It's done about $17 million in box office ticket receipts since it opened on Friday. I would think that it'll probably stay in the top five. Mostly comedies are dominating right now, with Forgetting Sarah Marshall and Baby Mama and Harold and Kumar being the top three movies of last week. So it'll probably stick around.
Well, that's good. I have to definitely get out and see that movie. And speaking of Baby Mama, I noticed that Amy Poehler made the celeb stoner list.
Yeah, well, she had been voted a while ago by the, you know, the readers of the site to a top celeb stoner. Amy Poehler, you know, who is on SNL and is a star of the movie Baby Mama, you know, is always delivering the pot joke when she does the weekend update. You know, we sort of know her a little bit from her years when she was with the Upright Citizens Brigade. You know, my first experience with Amy was with Upright Citizens Brigade when they hosted the first ever Stony Awards, the High Times Stony Awards, back in 2000. We've just been following Amy's career, and Amy's always been supportive in her own way. She's not very demonstrative in her, you know, activism. You don't see, you know, Amy involved with Normal or speaking out very much. But, you know, she does it in her own way as an entertainer on her show.
Well, I think that's an important way to demonstrate as well. I mean, I remember growing up in the 70s and seeing all the pot references that you get on Saturday Night Live from Chevy Chase and John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd. And there's I think that, you know, has a way of infecting the culture in such a way that people realize it's not a big deal. It's not something we need to worry about. It's just a fun little pretty much harmless intoxicant.
Well, it's nice that SNL, you know, still, you know, has the flavor of when it started, you know, because like you say, you know, Chevy Chase was famous for his bit, you know, have people send me marijuana.
Right.
And he gave the address on the air. And, you know, it was kind of a funny bit back in probably 75, 76. And
my favorite one I remember was Chevy Chase tying off like he was going to do heroin and then taking a joint and trying to jab it into his arm.
Oh, really?
And then the Dan Aykroyd voiceover comes on and says, "Why do you think they call it dope?" So,
not too smart.
Yeah. Well, Steve, thanks for joining us again here every Friday. Steve's here with CelebStoner.com. Check out the website. Get the latest information on celebrities and cannabis. And, hey, thanks, and have a great time at the march.
Yeah, happy marijuana day tomorrow.
You betcha.
Hello, I'm Casper Leach, host of Time for Hemp. When our politicians passed the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, the citizens of the United States had no idea that a new civil war had begun. Now, after more than seven decades of this war's escalation and spending well over $1 trillion of taxpayers' money, the result has been an arrest record of more than 37 million brothers and sisters for nonviolent drug offenses. Every year, we choose to continue this war. We do so at the cost of well over $69 billion. Add to this, we are building prisons faster than we are building schools. In fact, the prison industry is now one of the fastest-growing industries in the United States. We must end this civil war. We can with your help. Please, join LEAP, the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and become part of the solution to ending the war on drugs. Go to leap.cc and find out how to become a member.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org.
Well, it's a very special Friday musical break today. This weekend, you get the chance to stand up and be counted. The cannabis community parties and celebrates on 420, but the first weekend of May is always reserved for some peaceful protest. Please join your cannabis community in our Global Marijuana March, as thousands of us will get together across the globe. I couldn't think of a better song than New Revolution from the Freedom People to put you in the right frame of mind. The musical duo of Brad Stanfield and Perry El Mar are equal parts hippie and rock and roll. Today's track speaks to the great truth that freedom isn't free. It takes you and me and our whole cannabis community standing together to uphold our rights. This is the most important thing that you can do to help us legalize recreational cannabis, provide medicine to those that are sick, and help our planet by utilizing the amazing power of hemp. Visit the Freedom People's website from our links up at stash.normal.org, where you can also get a download of the MP3 for this song. Also, if you come to the Global March in Portland, Oregon, you'll get your chance to meet Cannabis Carrie at her booth for Bella Blue Tie Dyes. Check out some of the fabulous hand-dyed tie dyes that you can get online at bellabluetiedye.com. This is the Freedom People and their song, New Revolution.
It's an illusion. Bunch of confusion. The only solution, a new revolution. A new revolution. Modern day Robin Hoods in three-piece suits, stealing for the rich from the poor. They get elected, then we're subjected to the things that they make us pay for. Talking about bureaucratic power trips, hypocrite bullshit we see through the great facade. Gotta stop playing God. Oil war, prostitution, never making restitution. Stepping on the Constitution. Let's start a revolution. Freedom. They take our rights, then we got to fight for our democracy. It's an illusion, a bunch of confusion. The only solution, a new revolution. A new revolution. Corporations making billions, selling us their lies. Make a profit even if nobody's left alive. The new world order is the devil's disguise. With the television news set to hypnotize. With their bureaucratic power trips, hypocrite bullshit we see through the great facade. Gotta stop playing God. Oil war, prostitution, never making restitution. Stepping on the Constitution. Let's stop. Let's start a revolution. Freedom. It ain't free. If they take our rights, then we've got to fight for our democracy. Hey, yeah.
Let's have a sitting on the White House lawn. A sitting on the White House lawn. Let's have a sitting on the White House lawn.
A new
a sitting on the White House lawn. Let's have a sitting on the White House lawn.
A new
a sitting on the White House lawn. Let's have a sitting on the White House lawn.
A new
a sitting on the White House lawn.
The only solution. A new revolution.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America. And it's all because of your support. Take some time to join NORML at www.norml.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join NORML today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
This weekend, we're getting ready for the Global Marijuana March taking place all over the world. And in one of the places it's taking place is Cincinnati, Ohio. And we're speaking today with Tim Smith, who's a criminal defense attorney in Cincinnati. Tim, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
Well, thank you, Ben. Glad to be here.
I got your press release here from a pretty scary little story that's going on down there about how law enforcement is trying a backdoor tactic to shut down our free speech rights to protest marijuana laws. Tell our listeners a little bit about this tactic.
Well, this has been a festival or a music event that has been going on for over 10 years. On Monday, so less than a week before it was to go on again, RENU, which is the Regional Enforcement Narcotics Unit, which is a multi-jurisdiction narcotics or drug unit that basically is the main drug enforcement unit in the county area. And they showed up and talked to the owner of the place, which is a ballpark with an enclosed area, so that you can buy beer and wine and then take it out in the stands, or you can have a band in there as well, obviously.
Sure.
And they told him that if he followed through with his agreement and his contract with Hemprock, that they were going to have liquor agents undercover in the audience, and if they found anybody or caught anybody smoking marijuana or doing anything else that they thought was inappropriate, they would file liquor violations against him.
Wow. So let's get this straight. This is Hemprock Productions puts on a concert there. This is a kind of a festival show to help benefit the march and to help benefit the cause of protesting marijuana.
That's right.
Laws as they are.
Yes.
And so basically law enforcement says if anyone's caught smoking weed, we're going to take your liquor license.
That's right.
Wow. And so they're expecting the owners of the venue to be what? Out there policing the crowd and making sure everyone's good?
Because it's their position that while the law says that a bar owner or permit owner cannot allow the drug abuse or, you know, sale or use of illegal drugs, among other things, it's their position that if it occurs, then the owner has allowed it.
I see.
And he even offered not to sell any beer or wine, to close the bar down entirely. And they said, well, sorry, it's the premises that has a permit. Even if you don't sell any liquor, we're still going to file a liquor violation against you.
Wow. Do we hear law enforcement bringing this up at other events, say baseball games or football games or anything like that?
No. Well, at least I've never heard of it. I've never heard of it. I don't know what could be more clear than this is directed toward the speech and not toward the marijuana itself.
Now, do you anticipate there's any sort of case here to be made as far as a violation of civil rights, violation of the right to petition government and for free speech?
Well, we thought about that, but since they haven't done anything yet, then I don't think we decided we didn't have any kind of cause of action until they actually do anything, and we had to follow through.
I see.
And so, fortunately, the owner is brave enough, and we also have our contractual rights. We could sue him, so he's kind of caught between things as well. But he's really doing out of courage, I think. And so he's agreed to follow through and see what happens. And we're going to have security there. And we're going to tell people what the situation is and ask them not to do anything that will jeopardize his license, and hopefully everything will go fine.
I wonder how much of this is just posturing by law enforcement, that they wouldn't actually follow through with this, but they're more, their idea is that we'll just frighten people into canceling these sorts of events because, like you said, they haven't really taken any action yet.
Yeah, I just don't know. I just don't know. And there's only one way to find out.
Yeah, it's kind of scary to have to go that way, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And this could go a long way because, as I understand, the Liquor Commission, I've talked to people who regularly practice in, before the board, and they say that if that is the posture of the board, that if illegal drug activity goes on in a bar, it doesn't matter whether the owner knows about it. If it happens, then he's allowed it. Now, that issue has not really been litigated.
I was going to say, that's quite an amazing stand to take, that, you know, anything that takes place in the bar is going to be, or in the venue, I should say, is going to be the responsibility of the owner. My personal history, I'm an old club musician. I played in bars for 15 years, and I can tell you there's plenty of stuff going on in the restrooms and other places where the owners would have no idea what is happening.
Absolutely no idea. And it doesn't just happen in bars. It happens in baseball park, the Reds games. It happens everywhere.
Well, the way the Reds have played, you might need a little ganja. So we're going to go forward with this event. Tell our listeners, where does the event take place and when?
Riverfront West Sports Park Pavilion, 7958 Harrison Avenue in Miamitown, Ohio. Doors open at 7:30.
All right, and we want to encourage everyone in the greater Cincinnati area to attend that event and help support the end of adult marijuana prohibition, but don't light up.
Yes, and then on Fountain Square, right in the middle of the city, on Sunday, the next day, tomorrow, May 4th, from 3 to 6, there's also a rally down there with speeches and then a walk down to the federal building. And we don't have any, expect any problems there. We've not been threatened with anything with regard to that event.
Well, we'll keep the spotlight on Cincinnati, and we'll be back in touch with you. Let us know if anything does happen as far as law enforcement trying to shut the event down, and we will shine the bright, hot light of media attention on it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your help, and I'll let you know what happens.
All right. Tim Smith, he's an attorney in Cincinnati practicing criminal defense. Thank you for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
See you.
Señoras y señores, directamente de Chicago, Illinois, Los Marihuanos. Aplauso, aplauso.
I guess it's time to get high.
It's time to get high.
Finally today, a personal note. This year's Global Marijuana March marks the third year of my involvement with Normal through my local chapter, Oregon Normal. I can tell you it's been a life-changing experience. If you've got a local Normal chapter in your area, go to the march this year and get involved. You'll be surprised at the friends that you can make and the places you can go. Now, here in Oregon, we want to invite everyone in the Portland-Vancouver area to enjoy the huge festivities we have planned. We have Pioneer Courthouse Square reserved in the heart of downtown Portland for the entire day. Vendors and bands will begin at 10 a.m. Then we leave for the march at high noon, led by Ma, our cannabis dragon, a 40-foot-long hemp cloth dragon like you might see at a Chinese New Year, with a 4-foot head made completely from cannabis stalks. We return to the square for more of the festival with special guest speakers, including myself, educating the public about marijuana in between the sets of bands. We're kicking off our PR campaign for OCTA 2010, the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act, an initiative for 2010 that will legalize, tax, and regulate the sales of cannabis in Oregon through state-run liquor stores. The outdoor festival ends at 5, but then we're off to Mount Tabor Legacy Theater at Southeast 39th and Hawthorne at 8 o'clock to enjoy the Marijuana March After Party, a concert featuring the Martyrs and Marquee, with special guest Chief Greenbud from Nashville, Tennessee, and our headliners, Las Vegas hemp hop superstars Los Marihuanos. Then, the After Party is at my place, I suppose, since the DJ, his girlfriend, a visiting Sacramento Normal board member, and two vendors are crashing at my place for the weekend. Well, you know what? I don't care. I've got the greatest job in the world.
to get high.
It's time to get high.
Yeah,
it's time to get high.
Come on, roll it up, get the fucking light in, choke it up, choke it up. I get the
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, this one from Will Fulton, a marijuana grower. Quote, true, the founding fathers had provided for a specific right to bear arms, but the only reason they'd nothing to say about the right to plant seeds was because it never would have occurred to them that any state might care to abridge that right. After all, they were writing on hemp paper, end quote. He's right, you know, and that constitution written on hemp paper gives you the specific right to freedom of speech, freedom to assemble peaceably, and freedom to petition your government for a redress of grievances. Our grievance is the continued cruel prohibition of nature's most perfect plant, cannabis hemp. I'm Radical Russ. Take care of each other, tokers.